Studio B Live.
Hello, you're listening to Studio B Live. I'm your host, David Burns, with Long Lane Honeybee Farms. Good to have you along with us today. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Studio B Live. Please tell your friends about this broadcast about beekeeping, and I know they'll get a big bang out of tuning in and listening. What's Studio B Live all about? Well, to be truthful with you, it's just my wife, my family, myself, sharing with you our beekeeping experiences. We operate Long Lane Honeybee Farms here in central Illinois. We're common American folk people, hardworking people. We manufacture beekeeping equipment and we sell everything related to honeybees, including honeybees. We even graft and produce our own queens. So to help get more people started in beekeeping, we thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun if we started a broadcast where every day, kind of like a podcast, where every day we just sat around with our family, talked about different things about beekeeping, and so maybe you'll feel quite at home with us, realizing that we're just like you. We're just people trying to enjoy life, find a way to operate a business, make enough money to live a good life, and just enjoy the hobby that we started out with many years ago of beekeeping, turning it into a business. And so we're thankful today that you've tuned in to Studio B Live.
Hi, my name is Mark from Connecticut. And my question is, what species of honeybees do you raise and why? I'm new to beekeeping and I hope to buy my first bees in the spring. Living in Connecticut, the winters can be very cold and harsh. I have a few months yet to research this topic and would like your opinion. To all your beecasts, and want to thank you for doing such a great job.
Well, thanks for asking a great question there, Mark, about the species of honeybees. Boy, that is a good question. It's a question that so many people kind of argue about, you know, which bee is better. And I tell you what, let me make sure I give you the right lesson, but I wrote a complete lesson on this on my beekeeping lessons. Yeah, and it's lesson number 20 for those of you interested in the different types of honeybees. You know, we're still talking about the honeybee. Nothing, you know, we're not talking about the different kinds of bees, but we are talking about Apis mellifera, the honeybee. And there are different species based on where they have originated from. And then there are different types of characteristics that we as breeders try to draw out as the dominant gene in a specific species, and that makes for a different kind of, a different name of a bee. For example, you have your Minnesota hygienic queen, but that is actually an Italian bee, and so it's not a separate species. It's just that the characteristics have really been perfected so that the queen has more of the characteristics that we want. So which is best? Well, let's see. It's all a matter of an opinion. Before I tell you the different types of bees, let me tell you about queens and the way I look at it. You know, I'm not so concerned about the race of the honeybee, the species of the honeybee. I'm more concerned about the characteristics of a honeybee. So if I have a queen that is an Italian queen, and that Italian queen has all the characteristics that I like, you know, that's just the queen that I like. I like her characteristics. I really don't care whether she's Italian, whether she is Carnolian, whether she's a Russian, whether she's a Buckfast. And truthfully, I don't mind one bit. I almost prefer if the queen that I have is a mutt. And, you know, you've heard me say, if you've listened to many of my, read my lessons or heard me talk about it before, if I go and receive a dog at the dog pound, you know, the Humane Society, that's a mutt, they seem to live a healthier life than some of the more hybrid dogs. Some, you know, I've got labs, for example, labs, and they seem to have some hip problems that's pretty common to that breed of dog. And so sometimes when we do the hybrid things, we actually develop some unique problems. But you can always think about a mutt because you have more of a variety of genetic pool to choose from within that queen, and hopefully within that broader pool of genetics, we actually have more of the positive, more of the stronger characteristics of a healthy queen. So this is what this is kind of how I'm leaning toward. But having said that, you know, you need to check out lesson number 20 on my. It's at basicbeekeeping.blogspot.com. I go through all the different types of honeybees. I give you the scientific name. I give you the good traits, the poor traits, and you can kind of make a decision. Having said that, though, keep in mind that a lot depends on, you know, how they're mated, with what kind of drone stock these bees are mating with, how tight the... you know, the genetics are, because you can receive a Russian queen. Somebody may sell you a Russian queen, but it may not be as strong of a Russian as you might think, because maybe they open air mate the Russian queen, and maybe she mated with, you know, another set of drones that didn't have strong Russian characteristics or traits. So it just kind of depends. So, you know, you kind of want to go with someone who has a proven track record of really good queens. And I wouldn't really get all bent out of shape that I have to have an Italian or I have to have a Carniolan. I look at it like I have to have a good queen that lays very good and has some real strong hygienic behaviors, a good honey producer, and icing on the cake is that they're very gentle to work. So I hope that answers your question. Do check out lesson number 20. Thanks, Mark. Hi, this is David Burns with Studio B Live, and thank you for joining us today. We're in, well, Sherry and I are kind of in a different place today. We're down in a kind of a resort place, I guess. We're in a lodge in southern Illinois, and thought we'd take a few days vacation, maybe do a little bit of recording while we're down here. And we're in a lodge right now that's filled up with a whole bunch of deer hunters. And normally, we've been coming down here for 20 years, vacationing with our family. And normally, it's a pretty quiet place, and we always choose this place because it's real out of the way. Not many people know about it. It's really beautiful. But it seems like this weekend, Sherry, a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's a really nice old rustic lodge, and it's got a huge fireplace, and it's just full of guys who've been out hunting all day long, and they're back now, and it's just really nice.
I might, if I had more courage, I would go over there and ask them if they knew anything about honeybees, but it looks like they've had a pretty tough day deer hunting, and a lot of them had two or three beers already, and I don't know what kind of reaction I would get, so I think I'll just let them stay over there and eat their chicken, maybe because I'm chicken. But you had some fun in town today. You and our daughter, Carrie, actually kind of did a little bit of shopping, didn't you?
Yeah, we did a little bit of Christmas shopping. We did a little me shopping. We just went here and there. And while we're out shopping, I heard you went to a movie.
Yeah, no, I did. It's really not like me to see a movie, is it?
Never.
Well, I had heard a lot of people talk about, you know, the new movie. Always forget the title. The Silence? No? Wait a minute, I'm going to get it right here. The Secret of the Bee? The
No.
Secret Life of Bees.
The Secret Life of... The Secret...
The Secret Life of Bees? The Secret Life of a Bee? I don't even remember now. Do you know it?
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, you know, it's kind of popular now. It's on all the theaters. And I was kind of like, not really wondering, not wanting to go that bad, but some beekeepers said they really enjoyed it. And a friend of mine was telling me that he went and saw it. I think we mentioned this on one of our other programs, that He said he liked it. He said he. I said, well, did it have a lot to do with beekeeping? You know, because there's the other movie that I actually got at the video store. Is it called Yuli's Gold?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a real old movie. I mean, not. I mean, it's not old old. It's, but probably back in the 70s, maybe, or 80s.
No. No, it's not that old, I don't think.
I think it. Oh, you know, you may be right. I thought it was like late 80s or early 90s. Maybe that's when it was.
Yeah, maybe.
And it had the famous actor. Was it Peter Fonda? Yeah, Peter Fonda. And he actually is a beekeeper, or was at the time he was doing it. He did his own beekeeping parts in the show, as I understand it. But this movie today, I really liked it. It was a lot of fun. And Sherry told me that she had read the book several, about a year ago, I think you read the book. And you haven't seen the movie, so you don't know whether the movie is better than the book. But usually the book is better than the movie. And I don't know. As far as beekeeping, there wasn't a ton of it. But it just seemed like it had a more endearing plot to it. And it had enough beekeeping in there to really keep me interested in it. They really had some, you know, old extractors and old-looking beehives. I almost thought, Sherry, in one of the scenes, they had one of our supers that we manufacture.
Oh, that's cool.
I really think it was, because we had that unique handle. And it was a super. It was our rabbit corner joint with the handle in the middle. But I know a ton of people do that. But it really looked like one from our farm.
Cool. Well, we have since. Do you know where it was filmed?
You know, I really don't. And, you know, that... Yeah, they had a whole bunch of beekeeping equipment that they must have gathered up from everybody, you know, so yeah, I'm not sure. But I thought it was good. I enjoyed it.
Well, that's good, because I thought maybe it was going to be a chick flick.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, its storyline was not about beekeeping as much as it was, you know, about a family and their struggles and problems. I don't want to ruin it for people that haven't seen it. It was some coarse language that I don't like, but, you know, all in all, took my son, and he liked it, too. It was kind of neat.
We asked him if he wanted to go to the movie, and he said, well, what is my options? And we said, well, you could go shopping with us girls. And he said, well, he thought he'd rather see a movie about girls than go shopping with girls.
Yeah, that's when we were thinking it was a chick flick, right? And I said, well, maybe it's a must be a movie, a chick flick with chicks flicking bees, maybe.
Oh,
I don't know.
David.
Oh, but it was pretty good. But so... We'll probably miss producing a podcast one of these days. I thought I could keep the podcast going while we were down here, you know, the making them and publishing them online. But the internet connection here, sometimes it's really good, but usually it's pretty bad. So I wasn't sure. I know I cannot send a file in from the lodge. They have a satellite internet. And it's way in the woods, you know, a little bitty. I'd have to go out there and blow the clouds away to make it work. So, but I think people enjoy knowing that we're just out here having a good time before the bee season starts up. And boy, it really started early this year, and I'm thankful for that. But I was warned by several people that last year there were a lot of bee classes, and that people couldn't get booked into all their bee classes last spring, and so there was. And the people that did take bee classes, and I'm talking about all around the USA, and there's people that took classes, but then they couldn't order their bees. Everybody was out of bees. And so there's a lot of people now that are trying to get, you know, they're targeting 2009. They wanted to start in 2008 keeping bees, but now they have to push it down to this spring.
I don't understand. You mean they were taking classes like in the spring and they got over so late that they couldn't then order bees?
Yeah, exactly. And there were some people that didn't get to take the classes. They called and said, hey, sign me up for that April class. And they said, I'm sorry, we're booked. And so a lot of people didn't know what to do except just wait another year and maybe try to get a class or just go ahead and start keeping bees. You don't have to take a class to keep bees, but it is helpful, you know.
Well, we've got a class in February that's coming up. February 21st?
Uh-huh.
And during that class, you can order bees at that time. So that would be a good thing for people to do if they haven't already scheduled something like that.
Yeah. One place we visited today, there was a man there, and he runs a little place where they kind of novelty shop where they serve they serve sandwiches and things, and I got to telling him I was a beekeeper. And first thing he did was he asked me about, I heard all the bees were dying. That's getting so common. I started to say so old, but it's so common. I heard the bees are dying. What's it all about? And I'm like, well, I told him what I thought about it, my opinion. But anyway, he said, hey, I really want to sell your honey here. And, you know, we're probably, what, 3 hours away from home, you know. And it just, I mean, I could ship him things. But he's like, oh, please, can you sell your honey here? And, you know, I'll buy it, you know. And I was like, well, we kind of really have our honey already taken for. We have such a good customer base that we always run out. We're not hurting to sell honey. But he said he wanted to sell honey in his novelty shop. And I think beekeepers really need to capitalize on that, not just for their own personal financial gain, but, you know, if more people could see honey around, I think more people would understand that honey is a good product and it's good to be able to buy it at different places rather than just the kind you buy at the grocery store. I find a distinct difference between the honey at the grocery store than the raw honey that you buy from beekeepers off of in a farmer's market, because of the way that it's prepared, it's processed, you know. There's minimal processing to honey when it's done. Well, we're back home. we were recording that while we were on vacation, and just when it stopped, when you heard it stop, that's when the recording stopped because my batteries ran out. So, and then we didn't decide to do any more while we were at the lodge. And so I was just speaking about how important it is that people understand the difference between raw honey, pure raw honey that's from a beekeeper, where it hasn't been processed in a big industrial kind of way, you know, because you just don't have a lot of the processing elements to it. And that's not to knock down some of the big companies, because I really don't know how they do process it. But, Sherry, I was telling you about a gentleman that called me who works for the pharmaceutical industry. And he told me about some kind of agent that is introduced into certain types of maybe medicine, I think even food products, that it's turns it milky white. He said that they use it to process some honey. They inject this chemical in there, and it pulls any kind of foreign matter to itself, to this chemical agent. And then along the processing line, they have some kind of way to filter out this agent and whatever it is attracted to it. And when I heard that, I was like, well, maybe that's okay. I don't know what the agent is, and I don't know if everybody does that. I know that... the common beekeeper doesn't, but perhaps I thought, you know, that whatever that agent is that's being used doesn't sound like something maybe I would want in my honey. And I don't know, maybe it wouldn't all be filtered out. Maybe that, I'm sure it's approved by, you know, public health and FDA and all that. But there really isn't all that bad of stuff that's in honey, is it?
Well, no, all of it's good stuff, and I was just thinking as you were saying that you're being a little bit too polite, because when I heard that's what that they inject in honey, I was just
speechless.
There you go. I was speechless to find out that they inject this into honey, and then the ideal is that it will attract to itself any quote-unquote foreign material that's in there so it can pull it out. But what you don't understand also is that it's pulling out the good stuff. You know, like, you know, raw honey that we have will have pollen in it, and that's what people want who are looking for honey to help them with their allergies and things. If you ingest a little bit of pollen from the local, you know, flowers or crops, That's going to be what it is that helps your allergies. And this agent is pulling out the pollen. It's pulling out. What else did you say it would pull out?
Well, I don't know. And we can't speak as experts because, you know, we only heard it from one guy. And he said that he understood. Although he had good evidence that, because he even told me it does turn the honey a milky white color and then that agent's taken out. But, Yeah, we don't know exactly how it does work. So, but it, I guess, you know, we can always say, in our opinion, that doesn't sound good, does it?
No, it doesn't sound good. It's going to be taking out the good stuff as well as the whatever might be bad, which I can't even imagine what that would be, although I can understand some people not wanting to see a, you know, a bee leg floating around in there. But but when we sell our honey and we only filter it one time, and, you know, one time is really, really good here. You know, there's not been anything that's floating. There's not anything that's left in it. But we always very jokingly tell people, you know it's raw honey if you do see something floating in it. You know you have the good, honest, raw stuff then.
Yeah. Well, we do filter it through, like, you know, the 400 micron filter, which, it does stop any wax. And people that don't understand beekeeping, I'm always reluctant to talk about bee legs and bee wings being filtered out. So I always say, you know, it filters out things like maybe a broken piece of wood off of a frame, maybe the wax, you know. Yeah, but, you know, the truth of the matter is it does filter out because you can't.
An occasional eyeball.
Yeah, you know. But, you know, bees aren't that, you know, they're not dirty anyway.
Oh, no.
You can eat a bee. People eat bees.
Well,
and you could.
Oh, well, okay. But, you know, they're just so clean. I mean, they can't tolerate anything in a hive. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that people used to, you know, everybody used to have their own beehive. You would go out there, you know, when you wanted honey, you would go out there and bring a frame back in. You would hang it in your pantry and just kind of scrape it with a fork, and you would just let it sit there, and you would just let it drip out. And nobody filtered it back then. That's only something that we started, well, I don't know, you might know, do some research, but I can guarantee you nobody started doing a lot of filtering until, you know, in the recent couple of generations.
Well, look at it this way. When it comes to comb honey, nobody filters comb honey because you can't.
Right, right. You get whatever is in there. And there have been an occasional picky person or two who'll say, well, what is that? And you'll have to say, well, now you have to understand comb is a raw product right from the hive, and it can have, you know, beeswax, and sometimes beeswax is discolored for whatever reason.
And propolis.
Right, and it's got the pollen in there, and it's got, you know, and all that stuff's good for you. It's just there's some people that are squeamish about anything they don't exactly know what it is. We had a fellow that came out here a couple of years ago, and he was talking about his clientele, and he said his clientele was some ladies who just wanted it super, 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 super filtered. And he said he just had to filter that over and over and over and over again because they were just, you know, they were just real squeamish about anything that they saw in the honey. But, you know, there isn't anything that's going to hurt you in honey, even if you didn't filter it.
Yeah, and that was funny because he was saying, he said he was giving it to church women. And I'm a pastor, and I teased him. I said, oh, if you're giving it to the church women, it's got to look good because they can come back. But, you know, Sherry, I read and have heard, and it's a well-known fact, that a lot of the honey for a while was being imported from, like, China or other countries that had traces of antibiotics in the honey that's not allowed in our country. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, our government clamped down on that and really put, you know, the honey industry that was importing it kind of in a tizzy for a while. Because, and I don't think people realize that sometimes if you don't know the source of where the honey is coming from, and if it is being imported from places where they are allowed to use chemicals that we're not allowed to use, that may actually be traces of that in the honey. And whether or not it's bad for you, or that whether it would hurt you or not, you know, would certainly could be arguable or questionable. But I don't like the idea. I still like to know that my honey hasn't had any kind of foreign matter in it at all. So anyway, that's what we were talking about. Hey, you got something to say? I got a splinter I need to pull out. You hold the microphone.
Well, I was just going to say that one of the biggest commercial makers of bee products, and I won't say who it is, but it's probably one of the biggest ones there is, still uses imported beeswax from China. And, you know, to me it's the same thing. You know, if there's something that you can find in the honey, like you were just mentioning, I'm thinking you're going to find the same thing in your beeswax. Now, maybe I could be wrong, but, you know, to me it's the same thing. And, you know, and I think anybody in the U.S. who's making any kind of commercial products ought to be using beeswax from U.S. beekeepers. And there is plenty out there.
That is true. I wonder if we have any tweezers for this splinter. Or something like fingernail clippers. I can pull that out. I was cutting, getting some hives ready for tomorrow, and I got a splinter. Are you going to try to dig it out while I talk?
Sure.
It really hurts, though. It's right there. Oh, no, don't hurt. Do you feel it?
Yeah, I feel it.
Ooh. Did you get it?
Well, no.
No. I think you're going to have to get some tweezers or something. I don't know. Should I just... I just won't mess with it. Hey, and while we're talking about splinters and things of a personal nature, you have something in your teeth right there, like spinach.
Yeah.
No, it's right there. It's not like you to wear your stuffer in your teeth. Good thing it's radio. All right.
Did I get it?
Yeah, you look good now. Everyone... Everyone will be very proud of that. Our oldest daughter is funny because she had this thing where she and her husband, after they ate, they would have to, you know, kind of smile to make sure their teeth didn't have any food in it. And what? Oh, I remember. They would say to each other, they'd smile really big and say, "Is it a party?" Is that what they said?
Yeah, I guess.
They would say, "Is it a party?" You know, if they were around other people at the table, and then the other guy would look at her teeth and say no.
I think we should talk about merchandising of honey.
Oh, no, I had something else on my mind.
Oh.
Hi, David and Sherry. It's an honor to talk to you. I did have a question, but I had emailed one already, so I didn't know if you were wanting too many questions from one person, but this is Lane from Indiana. And if you get my question, I just wanted to ask what you thought was too much on extra feeding materials, as in the healthy bee material or pollen patties or things like that, for a new beekeeper getting started in the spring, if there was a chance of giving the bees too much extra food rather than just letting them go out. So that was my question. In addition to, I also had some questions about a custom order I was hoping to be making with you guys soon. I really like you guys' operations there and hope to do some business with you soon.
He's wondering about, you know, feeding a hive like honeybee healthy and pollen at substitutes in a hive. So, wow, especially a first-year beekeeper. Here's the thing. If you feed a hive pollen, it almost sounds like that little kid's book. If you give a mouse a cookie, they'll want a glass of milk. And it's kind of true.
Feed a bee pollen.
Yeah,
if you want a glass of water.
Well, that is true too. If you do feed them pollen, they're not going to. This time of the year, people don't realize that they're not going to do anything if the queen isn't really laying eggs because it's darker. Like here in Illinois, we don't have. It gets dark at 4:30 or 5. You know, sun goes down and then it gets dark pretty quick. So the queens aren't laying that much now. So if I put a pollen patty in there and they're not needing it to raise their brood, they're not really going to touch it. Plus they're in cluster, so they may not make their way up to it to consume it. So that's kind of out of the question this time of the year. Although in the spring, if you give your hives these pollen patties when they're starting to lay a lot, it really can accelerate the buildup of the brood nest. And it can kind of cause things to happen that a new beekeeper can't deal with. They can put too much pollen in the brood nest area, and then the queen can't lay because she's congested with too much pollen. And it can also cause a hive to build up so fast that the new beekeeper is overwhelmed by the rapid buildup. And, you know, a little package of 10,000 bees isn't too intimidating, but once it gets to 40,000 and 60,000, 80,000 bees, they're pretty intimidated. I really like the honeybee healthy, and I think I'll interview the gentleman that has created that product. It's just a food stimulant, a feeding stimulant. And it's made mostly, I think, of spearmint and lemongrass oil. I don't know how they get the oil out of lemongrass. I guess they squeeze it and wrench it or something. But, you know, it really smells good. It really has been proven to be, you know, the testimonies has shown it to be very good. Some people use it for a spritz spray instead of smoke. And so, Dan, I think you would have to really weigh the differences out. A top feeder this time of the year is bad because the bees might try to get up there and it turn cold, you know, and they won't make it down. Entrance feeder is not good in the wintertime. We have some of the frame feeders up there for sale, Sherry, and if you put the frame feeders in there, they replace a frame and you can pour, it's a little bitty trough that looks like a frame size and it holds sugar water. But if you fill that up and it's kind of far away from the cluster, they're not going to make it over there anyway. So my advice is you should have taken care of your bees really good all summer, and when September the 30th rolls around, there's nothing you can do much to help them out. Hey, what's that icing stuff that they put on cakes that starts as fonda? Is that how you? I don't know how to say it.
I don't know either.
Oh, fondant. Oh, it's an icing. Well, it's a real kind of stiff, sugary icing that bakeries have. And I know everyone's saying it. They're going, oh, he doesn't know how to say it. Everybody knows how to say it, but I don't use it that much. But it's like an icing, a sugar. And you can get it, you can make it kind of real thick, like a paste that goes on cakes or something. And you can put that in the hive in the wintertime. And I think that is a good way to feed them if they can get to it. It's a stiff sugar. It won't drip. And a lot of people put, and you can put candy. You can make candy. I should do a recipe, but you can make a hard candy type of material to put in a hive that they can nibble on to kind of keep eating when they do break cluster. But keep in mind, in the wintertime, when they eat, they got to go to the bathroom. And when they drink, they have to go to the bathroom. And if it's too cold to do that, dysentery can really be a problem. Hey, and another thing, Sherry, I want to mention, and then I'll let you talk about merchandising. Honey, is that what you want to talk about? People think that it's wise to feed your bees heavy in the fall. And it seems logical, you know, get the hive built up, and I advocate that, it's good. But there's a danger in it too. If they pull that honey or that, you know, sugar into the hive and they don't have time to dehumidify it, dry it down to what their level is, they can actually go into the winter with this, you know, nectar or this sugar that's much too watery, and it could cause problems. It could get moldy. It could ferment. I mean, there could be bacteria. There could be things that happen because they didn't get a chance to process it like they do. And again, we advocate get your bees ready for winter, you know, by September, and you should be combining hives. Don't try to nurse along this struggling hive in the month of September, October, November, hoping to build it up, because some of the things that we do can really work against the bees and actually kill them.
And two, if you've got pollen patties left over and you're thinking you're going to use them in the spring, you need to take those pollen patties and put them in the freezer, because it is a food substance and you can't let it sit around on your shelf in your shed or something like that. So get it put up.
All right. Very good. Let me just hit a couple of more things. We've been getting a lot more emails, Sherry, about people wanting packages. I'm going to have to just do a copy and paste of the answer because everybody wants to order their bees now. Here's a guy. He says, hey, I'm interested in your prices for your 2009 packages in Queens. I may be trying to group a hive order and package order together. Also, what times do you expect the packages? So rough time is fine. Again, you know, we're not taking orders for our packages until January the 5th. If it's busy, keep calling back, and we'll start taking orders January the 5th. We want Sherry to have a great birthday on January the 3rd. and these are packages with Italian queens in them. These are not the queens we raise. They are good Italian queens, though, that we're proud of and proud to be selling in the packages. We do raise queens, but not until probably late April or into May is when we start selling our queens. $75 for a package plus shipping. We talked about that in the last program. So If any of you are hearing this and you want to ask that question, well, now you don't have to ask it. I have just answered it.
And the rough shipping date we're looking at, I think, late-ish April, maybe the third, anywhere from the second to the third to the fourth weekend in April. I know people want them earlier, but they really, really shouldn't go out any earlier because you can still have a code snap in March. You can still have a code snap in April, and you don't want your bees coming in during a code snap. So we wait as long as possible in that regards. But your bee is a bee okay. If you don't get bees until late April, early May, it's fine.
Yeah, a swarm is in April. Oh, wait a minute. What is that phrase? Catch a swarm in May, it's worth a bale of hay. Catch a swarm in June, it's worth a silver spoon. Catch a swarm in July, it's not worth a fly. So, you know, you can pull it off if you get them pretty early. Hey, here's an interesting email, Sherry. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know what all this means, but this guy writes and he says, I only recently came across your Studio Bee Live broadcast. They're really good. I edit our local bee club newsletter, Plymouth County Beekeepers Association, Southeastern Massachusetts. You say Massachusetts or Massachusetts? Massachusetts, isn't it? And I think
they don't want you to say it at all now.
Oh, no, that's true. I should just abbreviate it. And I have sent the URL out to all of our members via a PCBAE news. Oh, that means his newsletter, probably, or something. E-news, you know, like email, probably. Mm-hmm. I put out when I come across anything I may find interesting to others. Anyway, I downloaded your most recent SBL, which was mostly about clothing a newbie should wear. I loved it, and took the liberty to edit it from the beginning
up to a skosh after you gave your telephone number and email address.
What's a skosh?
A little.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Oh.
So beginning up to a little after you give your telephone number and email address.
Oh, so I might have said some real stupid stuff he thought was stupid. He just edited that out, maybe.
Don't know.
Good for him for covering us. I have subsequently posted it to the following page on my other website. So he's put Studio B Live on another website. I don't think you will mind, as it may bring more traffic and more people to listen to your talks. The B-site is new within the last year. I have had my main site below for about 12-plus years. It's also designed to educate people about the benefits of honeybees in an attempt to encourage interested people to become a beekeeper. The two websites are my retiree indoor hobby.
So Al is retired, and this is something that he does for his hobby.
He said, I will definitely go back and catch some more of your broadcasts. They are quite unique, and you guys are very good at it. Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah, they're quite unique.
Oh, yeah, they're unique. He was being kind about that we're really good at it. All right, let me just say, I read that one. If that's the danger about emailing me, I may actually read your email on the air. Mona, she says, Mona Dillard here. Do you know her? She knows us. We know her. We just can't remember, can't put the name with the face. 217.
Oh, yeah, Mona was in one of your classes, your beekeeping course last year in Champaign that you taught.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I've been reading the flow of emails. Oh, and see, some of this I probably should edit out. Oh, she said, I want to purchase two of your Illinois queens if available next spring. We've got a very aggressive hive this first year. I about croaked when I was at your place picking up some of your equipment and hearing you talk about removing supers without gloves or head protection. Mm-hmm. Our bees chase us nearly off our 2 acres every time we come near it.
Oh.
So my question is to you, should we attempt to kill off this entire hive, expecting them to make it through the winter? And her husband suggests using carbon dioxide. It was a huge colony, boiling out the inner cover even when first opening it. Or will requeening it in the spring take care of our problem, providing the colony makes it through the winter? Should we attempt to split and get two new queens, or should we plan on purchasing two new packages with two of your Illinois queens? Any advice is welcome, you know. Well, that's too bad to have a hive that's aggressive. They should never chase you off your 2 acres.
Wow, that does sound very aggressive.
I wonder where they got them. I'd like to find out where she got them. But anyway, and they could have superseded, and they could have mated with drones that maybe were more aggressive. But I would definitely, don't ever kill a hive. Wait till spring, and as early as you can get some of my great queens, probably late April or early May, then just get a couple of queens and give your existing queens a very polite going away party. Kill them and introduce these new queens and wait, 3 or 4 weeks, and everybody should be happy campers in there.
For people who, I think I just answered my question, but I got to thinking, you always advocate killing off your queens, and I know I've met some women who just cannot bring themselves to do that. Is there a harm in just letting them loose in the grass? And the answer would be,
it is.
The bees would come after her, wouldn't they?
Well, now, not just that, but she probably will go back and try to find a hive. Hmm. And when she goes back, she's going to find a neighbor's hive, or go back to your hive, or go back to one of your other hives and fight with that queen. And then all at once you've got a nice hive that turned mean because this queen that you didn't kill found a new home and she's still too aggressive. Yeah, so need to knock her off.
Oh,
it's sad, isn't it?
That is too bad.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's see, Sherry, you want to spend a little time now talking about the honey, merchandising your honey, which we've talked about a little bit, right?
We have, and I just wanted to just mention a few things here to tag on to the rest of our discussion about where to sell your honey, and we talked about that. All the different places, the bazaars and the fall festivals and the setting up your own little place at the end of the lane or setting up your truck where it has a pop out shelving and you can pull into a parking lot, those kinds of things. Some people need to do that, but we've always been able to just sell it right out of our home fairly quickly most of the year. So you'll just have to experiment and see which thing works best for you. But now I wanted to talk a little bit about what your honey needs to look like. There's lots of different ideas, and you'll have to experiment in the area where you live. When we first put up our first table, I remember putting up the table and trying to decorate it and come up with all sorts of different levels of boxes to highlight different things. And we were also selling, along with it, homemade soap, the lye soap using beeswax, and some lip balms and some hand balms and lots of different things like that. And I began to realize that it was just so much stuff on the table and it looked so busy that most people's eyes were just kind of glazing over. So we actually, the next year, we actually got rid of everything that we had except we had a tablecloth on our table, and then we just set the honey up. We had, honey in 1 pound, honey in 2 pounds, honey in 3 pounds, honey in 5 pounds. And we simply sold it like that. And for whatever reason, it went so much better for us than trying to have lots and lots and lots of different items. I'm not discouraging you from doing that, because there are some people who will come up to your table who will want to buy, a balm or soap before they want to buy the honey. But you need to experiment with it a little bit and see, how your clientele is and how it is in the area where you live, because you might just want to, be very simplistic. As far as the bottles, we talked about that last time. We have found that people prefer the glass bottles over the plastic, but honey will crystallize faster in glass bottles than they will in the plastic bottles. But it is much easier to liquefy that back down when they're in glass instead of plastic. You don't really want to put plastic in your microwave, and there's some plastic you don't really want to put in a boiling thing of water on your stove either. So you're going to have to work that out in your mind. Glass is
The canning jar glasses are cheaper than the plastic that you can buy in some beekeeping equipment, big beekeeping equipment places. It can be cheaper, but it's also bulkier, and it's a lot heavier if you want to cart that around to places. And some folks just simply cannot carry really heavy products with them when they want to go out and set up a table. So you just have to consider what's best going to work for you. Then we also talked about how to fill your bottles, and we talked about that last time, and we talked about making sure that you fill your honey all the way up to the neck so that there's no gap between the honey and your lid. The plastic ones, you can get lids that once you screw them down, they automatically have the white seal that comes down on top of them. They don't do that with the canning jars, of course, but you can also get stickers that you stick on the top of the jars, and then there's a little extension, a little leg that comes down and tapes on the side of your jar, so that gives the idea that nobody's tampered with it, nobody has gotten into it, and those kinds of things. So you'll have to experiment. Comb honey. There's several different kinds of containers, and they also come with the plastic sleeves that go around it that you put heat up against them they make really nice little what am I trying to say, David? What are those heat
shrink wrap? Like a shrink wrap?
Right, but what's the machine called? Okay, we don't know what the machine's called, but it actually blows hot air on there. But most people use a hair dryer for that, although some people will find their hair dryer's not hot enough, and these nice little cool machines are actually very, very hot, and so they'll do that shrink wrap thing very quickly. So there's lots of options out there, and you're just going to have to play with it. I think I played with it for a couple of years before I really came across something that I like. But one thing that you have to do when you're playing with the different size jars and things like that is you have to make sure that your labels fit your different kinds of jars. And so notice that. That's why some people will just use all of the canning jars, and that way they can get one kind of label that will fit on all of them. But if you're going to get like Honey Bears, and then you're going to get your 3-pound is a canning jar, and then your 5-pound is a half-gallon milk jug, you're going to need different kinds of labels for all those kinds of sizes. So you need to keep that in mind when you're picking your kinds of jars as far as the labeling goes. Now, as far as merchandising them in your store or on your table, we have ours on a five shelf shelf that has five shelves. That just really explains a lot.
They're all chrome, and you can pick them up at Sam's Club or something. They're not really cheap. They're really heavy duty. In fact, I had a 350-pound honey tank on one. That's how strong they are. They're easy to put together.
And then we have them all on there, and it's a really nice presentation when people actually come into the store and they can easily see the different sizes and what they might want. Now, something else that you can think about, especially now during the holidays, is we have also a shelf of gift baskets, and I just went and got a couple of really nice Christmas containers that you can get. Gosh, you can get them at Menards, or sometimes you can get them at Walmart. And inside those, you'll find like a honey bear, and you'll find some honey sticks, and a lip balm, and a candy cane, and some candy. And we have those during the holidays, and people are very interested in those as far as for a gift presentation. So there's lots of different things like that that you can do with your honey. The best thing you need to remember is to have really good looking presentation of your honey, and it's going to be so easy to sell. There's some people who'll take gingham, and they'll put it on the top of their jars and put a big fancy ribbon on it. And some people will tie on a honey. Are those called honey daubers?
Yeah.
What are those?
Yeah, honey daubers.
That's a proper name for them.
Yeah.
And they'll tie a honey dauber on there, which you can buy, and they don't cost a whole lot of money. And you know, sometimes those are kind of nice, but you know, generally speaking, the simpler we went with our display, the better everything looked.
Hmm. Well, thanks, hon. That was good. Anything else you want to share about marketing the honey, making it look good? Remember, as a beekeeper, you are representing your bees and all their work and the efforts that they put into making the honey. So do your part to make it look attractive to customers and tasty, and make sure that it's a very clean and good-looking product. Yeah. Boy, Sherry, it's you know, we've really enjoyed a couple of days off on vacation. We didn't get to do any podcasts then. We were just kind of enjoying some time away because things start getting busy right now, and they are busy. Lots of things to do, lots of hives to build, and this week is Thanksgiving. We'll probably not do a couple, maybe, I know we won't do a podcast on Thursday because we'll be celebrating with our family, and I'll be so full of food I won't be able to bend over and breathe and talk into the microphone. We had a good couple of days away, but when we kind of came back, lots to do. I was looking on the shelf over there at those T-shirts. I love those shirts that we have that says Long Lane Honeybee Farms on it. And on the back it has a skep and our website and our phone number. And I always wear one of those. In fact, I have worn that shirt like almost like a uniform. It's just a pullover T-shirt, but it's beautiful.
Well, so folks know you don't wear just one. You've got about 10 of them that you rotate through.
Yeah, we actually bought them to sell, but it didn't work that way.
No, it didn't. I brought them in the house, you know, to get them ready, and David would be like, okay, I need one of those shirts. Oh, it's dirty. Okay, grab another one out of the sale pile. And pretty soon he'd gone through like 10 of them, and I'm like, well, so much for that idea.
But we do still have some left, and I think, you know, I like wearing them. Even in the wintertime, I'll wear like a, what do they call those flanneled shirts? No, they're
thermal.
Yeah, thermal shirt underneath my T-shirts. But we'll be happy to sell those. What do we sell those for? What price?
$10, I think.
$10? That's pretty cheap.
Okay, make it 15.
No, you said 10. Let's make it 10. But I think people would be honored to wear our shirt and advertise for us in your neck of the woods. I mean, it's a nice looking T-shirt. Got a big honeybee on the front, and on the front it says Long Lane Honeybee Farm. So if you're interested in one of these T-shirts, we don't have a lot of different sizes. Is that really all we have right there, Sherry?
Yeah.
All right. Let me share the sizes. And, you know, you probably want to get them a little bit bigger because I wear an extra large. And all right, we got two extra large. And we have two XXL. So give us a call if you'd like one of our T-shirts for $10. You could even PayPal us or something. I don't think they're on our website, but you can call us. 217-427-2678. All right. Well, Sherry, I guess that's the end of our program today. You have anything else you want to share with our delightful audience out there?
You know, just one thing. I was talking to a lovely lady this afternoon by the name of Josephine. Josephine lives in Dallas, Texas, I believe. And she was asking about the show because she said she doesn't, I believe she was talking about she just doesn't have time to get on the internet and listen to it.
Mm.
And so I was explaining to her, and you might want to explain to the folks again because I'm computer illiterate most of the time. I mean, I can get my email and I can make a snazzy flyer, but
that's not true. You're better than you do Excel, you do Microsoft Word, you do spreadsheets, PowerPoints. You're good. You just don't know the web stuff.
Okay, web stuff. So would you explain how people can get on there and they can download the program so they can hear them at a later time?
Yeah, okay. When you go to our website, you know, you go to the honeybeesonline.com. And you'll see on our image, our main image has a little square by the beehive. And it's a, believe it or not, you may not notice it, but it says, you know, Studio Bee Live. And it's an image of a bee kind of at an angle. And if you click on that image, it will take you to our Studio B Live page with our broadcast there. Now, when you look at that page, you'll see the most recent broadcast at the top and the archived broadcast below that one. And I have two links. I actually do this myself, you know. So, but the two links, the first one, let me think about that. Yeah, the first one, if you click on it, let me think. I see. Yeah, that actually, it's kind of silly the way I have it set up, but it's just, I guess it's user-friendly this way. There's two links. And the first one, it says, you know, like, November the 24th, 2009, click here. I mean, you click on it and it starts playing. It will automatically start your Windows Media Player and you can play it. I don't know why we're telling people this. If they're listening, they know how to do it, you know. But maybe they don't know how to download it, right? Okay. Now, the next link beside that one to the right, they're really close together. Next one will say something like download the MP3 file, or it will say MP3. The trick is if you right-click, you know, a mouse has a left and a right button on it, and we typically use the left button for all of our functions. But if you right-click on that download link, there'll be an option. It will say Save Target. And if you click on Save Target, it will actually begin downloading this Studio B Live broadcast to your computer. And what's neat, you know, if you have a smartphone or a phone that has MP3 capability or an MP3 player, then you can just dump that MP3 file into whatever player you want to listen to it in. And it's a pretty easy way to do it that way. And that way you can listen to it at your own convenience. And what I thought about doing is taking the broadcast, Sherry, and putting them on CDs. And that way people could listen to them, on, you know, in their car or on a CD player or something too. But we might do that.
Yeah, that would be good. Now, see, yeah. I would buy that. I would get a CD before I would download onto my non-existent MP3 player.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was talking to a gentleman, and I forget his name, but he called me pretty early this morning from Florida, and he was telling me that, you know, Keith Delaplane's broadcast, it's a video that we've talked about before, mm-hmm. and it's a year in the life of an apiary. It's kind of old because he looks different now than he did when he did that show, but it was on RFD TV. And he was telling me how much he used to record. I loved it. He said, I used to record every episode, and before I went to bed at night, I would watch a 30-minute episode, and I'd doze off, you know. And so that's kind of why we do the broadcast, because we know there are beekeepers that are just crazy about bees. They want to talk about bees all the time. And he, too, said he was about to drive his wife crazy talking about bees. But it gives us beekeepers an outlet to kind of talk and learn more about bees and beekeeping. And I'm sure that if you listen to these broadcasts long enough, not only will you be entertained, but you're bound to learn a thing or two in these broadcasts. So we want you to keep listening. And like Al did here, he told everybody in his association about our broadcast. Maybe you can do the same thing. Tell other people, friends, about Studio B Live. Have them tune in. We always appreciate having more listeners, and we always appreciate having you as the listener, too. So if you'd like to contact us with a beekeeping question that we can share on the broadcast, call us at 217-427-2430. And if you'd like to place an order for one of these great t-shirts for $10 that says Long Lane Honeybee Farms, or to order some beekeeping equipment or one of our hives, give us a call. Our order line is 217-427-2678, and either me or Sherry will answer the phone and talk personally to you and take your order. But we only have two t-shirts available in the different sizes, 2 an extra large and 2 an extra extra large, and so you'll enjoy wearing those, and we appreciate that. So this is David and
Sherry
saying remember to behave yourself.